From the NBC University Theater, a radio version of one of the most sensitive English novels of the past decade, Elizabeth Bowen's The Death of the Heart. Our star, Miss Maureen O'Sullivan. We bring you a book that has been a literature's delight for the past decade. An English book with a London setting. Elizabeth Bowen's The Death of the Heart. Three sections comprise the book: the world, the flesh, and the devil. All three have been brought to radio in today's adaptation by Richard E. Davis. At intermission time, we will bring you a commentary on the writing of Mrs. Bowen by Diana Trilling, literary critic and author. Here then, in dramatic form, The Death of the Heart, starring as Portia, Miss Maureen O'Sullivan.
This is the story of an innocent girl in a world where innocence so constantly finds itself misunderstood that inwardly innocent people learn to be disingenuous. They find it difficult to communicate with others and understand them in the harsh terms of the everyday world. Incurable strangers to the world, the innocent are bound to blunder and cause the less innocent to suffer. The innocent are so few that two of them seldom meet. When they do meet, their victims are strewn all around.
Thank you so much, Alan.
Hello. Who are you?
My name's Portia.
My name's Eddie. May I ask what you're doing holding my hat?
I was passing on the stairs when I saw you leave the drawing room, so I thought I'd get your hat for you.
Huh? How very thoughtful. How did you know it was my hat?
You were wearing it last week when you came to tea with Anna. I saw you through the upstairs window.
Goodness, we are thorough, aren't we?
I would have known anyway because the other gentleman who's still having tea with Anna, you know, the literary gentleman.
Oh, you mean St. Quentin Miller?
Yes. You see, he doesn't wear a hat.
How lucky for me. Otherwise, we might never have met. What did you say your name was?
Portia. Portia Crane. Anna's married to my brother, Thomas.
Good heavens, so you're Anna Crane's sister-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she said you'd come over from France, but I never imagined that a sister-in-law could be so lovely or young.
My brother Thomas is many years older than I.
Why weren't you at tea?
I just came in from school. Now I'm late. Well, it was nice meeting you. Goodbye.
Goodbye. I do hope we meet again, Portia.
Dear me, she can't be a day over 16. I wonder how Anna's taking this.
More tea, Anna?
No, thank you, St. Quentin. I've had quite enough.
When did he left? Didn't I hear someone come in the house?
It was Portia.
How are you getting along with Portia these days?
I thought I was doing quite well until I read her diary.
Oh? She show it to you?
I ran across it by accident. I didn't mean to read it. I wish I hadn't now. She's like a spy.
Of course. All diaries read like spy reports.
She watches every move Thomas and I make. She writes down every word we say, or so it seems. And the sum of it all is that she doesn't really care much for Thomas and me.
And how does Thomas feel about Portia?
He's been a constant source of embarrassment to Thomas all his adult life. St. Quentin, do you realize that Portia was born when Thomas was in his second year at Oxford? His whole college knew the scandal about Thomas Quayne's father divorcing his mother, running off to live in the south of France with his mistress.
Sounds quite romantic, I must say.
In a novel, perhaps. But in real life, it was dingy. Especially when Portia was born.
Why did Thomas ever take her in?
Well, after Thomas's own mother died, and a year or so before his father's death, the old man wrote him a letter asking him to care for Portia if anything happened to the woman. So when she died in Switzerland this winter, Portia was sent to us.
I see. Did you want Portia?
No.
Oh, how very awkward this must be for all of you. Will she join us at tea, do you think?
Yes, but not until she drops down to see my housekeeper, Matchett. You see, I know her habits very well. Matchett was her father's housekeeper before he ran off. I think they have secrets. They're very fond of each other.
How good everything smells, Matchett.
I was just making my own tea, Miss Portia. Close the door behind you.
Can't you say hello before I went up to tea?
That was nice and thoughtful of you. Watch now. Don't be putting your frozen hands over the radiator. That's the way to give yourself chilblains.
I wasn't thinking.
Give me your hands. There. These fingers want rubbing.
Ooh, wow.
Oh, I never saw a girl so tender to cold.
Oh, please, Matchett, don't be angry. When people are angry with me, it makes it feel as though it was my fault having been born.
I remember the day you were born, when the news came from France.
Do you really, Matchett?
Yes. I was folding linens, and I said to myself, if the little girl had to be, she had to be. No doubt there's a reason and a purpose for her.
I wish I was sure there was a reason for me. That's what's so terrible with Anna and Thomas. That's why they're always watching. They'd forgive me whatever it was that's wrong if they knew what my reason was. Since I just sort of happened, I don't know what I'm supposed to be.
Now, don't get yourself over the past.
Oh, I'm sorry. Didn't mean to. Fingers are better now.
Good. Now get on up to tea. She'll be expecting you.
Wish I could have my tea with you, Matchett.
A lot she'd like that. When you go up, be sure to take your school books with you. She saw some here yesterday and she didn't like it at all.
Oh, dear. Anything else been wrong?
Well, she wasn't pleased about your bedroom.
Golly. Matchett, what was Anna doing in my room?
Oh, I suppose she just took a fancy. It's her house, you know, like it or not.
But she always said it's my room. Has she touched things?
How would I know? You didn't always have secrets at your age.
But I should be able to tell if she's touched things. Birds know when you've been at their eggs. They desert.
And pray, where would you desert to? You'd better forget such silly notions and get upstairs. She don't like it when you're late for tea.
Look who's here.
Hello.
What a pleasant surprise. How are you, Portia?
Well, thank you, Mr. Miller. Did you just get back from school? Just now, Anna. I've been washing.
How dirty lessons must be.
Did you have a nice day?
Oh, yes. We've been doing constitutional history, musical appreciation, and French.
I'm sure it's very fascinating. I can't offer you any tea now because you're much too late.
Oh. Why don't you sit down, Portia?
Oh, not on that stool without a back.
Oh, but I like this particular stool. It's friendly.
Have my chair, Portia.
I was quite distressed with your room today.
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant to straighten it.
I don't mean to keep after you all the time, but we do our best around here, Portia. Even though we can't all be perfect. I have it. Hello? Oh, hello, darling. You're in the study. I see. Yes, I'm here. Some friends with me at the moment. Very well, darling. That was Thomas. He's just come in. He doesn't feel like tea. Portia, dear, why don't you go down to Thomas in the study?
Oh, did he say for me to? Did he ask for me?
I don't think he knows you're in, but you can go down and tell him. He'll be ever so pleased, I'm sure.
All right, I'll go.
Be sure to give Thomas my love.
All right.
You did not do well, Anna, raving about that room.
I couldn't help myself. Maybe I was just being what she thinks we are. What, I'm not sure.
A couple of cads, if you ask me. What a high forehead Portia's got.
St. Quentin, all the better to think about you with, my dear.
Very clever.
Dearest Diary, February 6th. This has been a most unhappy tea time, except for meeting Eddie. I couldn't go to Thomas's study. He didn't want me. He never wants anyone in his study. He just sits there and never talks unless you talk to him. Thomas looks past you, but never at you. The only person Thomas ever looks at is Anna.
Thomas, where's Portia? I sent her down to see you.
Why? So she wouldn't disturb you in St. Quentin?
As a matter of fact, he was just about to leave when Portia came in for tea. Dreadfully late, it upset me.
I wish I could manage to like her better.
Or love her even.
My dear Thomas, love is not a thing one can mean to do. You either do or you don't. Meaning to has nothing to do with it.
You might try.
Would you really like me to love her? To get wrapped up in Portia? To wait for her to come in? Oh, no, you're too selfish for that, Thomas. You'd only like to seem to love her. Only I'm not good at seeming. I was horrid to her at tea, but I had my reasons, I must say.
Anna, you don't have to remind me that you don't like this.
Please don't get worked up. We should be getting ready for dinner. We have a guest.
Oh, must we have a guest? We haven't been alone in weeks.
Well, we can't just all sit around this house alone together.
Why not?
Because we can't all three sit around. It gets me down. You don't seem to know what it's like with that girl staring at us.
Well, she goes to bed at 10.
Well, never is 10, as you know. I cannot stand being watched. And she watches us, Thomas. She makes us not alone.
Anna, we could be alone tonight. I mean, after 10.
Let me go, Thomas.
Oh, Anna, I'm never with you, never.
Thomas, if you don't mind, I've had a very trying day.
It's a wonderful life we have together, Anna. We're minor in everything but our passions.
Wherever did you read that?
Nowhere. I woke up and heard myself saying it one night.
How pompous you were in the night. I'm glad I was asleep.
No, let's forget it. Oh, by the way, who's dropping by after dinner?
No one you know. His name's Major Brutt. He just arrived in London. He got me through a friend.
A stranger? Who does know him?
I do, or did, after a fashion. Major Brutt spent an evening many years ago with me and Robert Pigeon.
Oh. Dear Pigeon. You think you'll ever forget that gay Lothario?
If you're sincerely jealous, your language fails to measure up.
Perhaps Brutt brings a message.
That's not fair. Brutt hadn't seen Pigeon in years. When he called, he thought Pigeon and I had married. Didn't know we broke it off. He was upset when I told him.
Nothing like the fidelity of the vicarious lover who's once seen a kiss.
He saw several kisses, if that's what you're after. If you don't care for the idea of his coming, ring him up and tell him to stay in his hotel. He was only coming for a drink.
No. Let him come. I should like very much to meet Major Brutt.
There you are, Major. Irish whiskey and soda.
I must say this hospitality is very kind of you all.
Oh, nothing really. A friend of Pigeon's is always welcome. Oh, tell me, Major, what sort of a chap was this Pigeon?
Oh, he was an exceptional chap. Not steady, but brilliant.
I never met him, alas.
Is Robert Pigeon dead?
Oh, bless me, no, Miss Portia. He's a clever chap with a charmed life. Oh. Never sits still. He would never have met an ordinary fellow like me at all if it hadn't been for the war. We both took it on the Somme and met in the hospital.
Was Pigeon badly wounded?
In the shoulder. It was an ugly scar.
Pigeon was versatile. He could write and paint and play the piano like a professional.
What I always remember is that he could balance an orange on the rim of a plate.
Oh. Did he do that very often?
Very often indeed.
Yes. Well, tell us about yourself, Major.
Nothing much to tell. I have an army pension, 20 years, including 10 in Malaya. I have several irons in the fire.
Are you looking for a job?
I have hopes of realizing some sort of a position. The only trouble is I've got a bit out of touch.
Oh, yes?
I stuck out there abroad too long, it rather seems. I'd rather like now to be in touch for a bit.
But in touch with what? What do you think there is, then?
Well, I know there must be something all you people get together about.
Well, there may be, but I don't think there is. I don't think we really get together. You know, that's one of the tragic things about life. People always believe that other people are in touch with happiness. But it's a false idea.
My father and mother always believed that the people in England were very happy.
Portia, I don't want to spoil the party, but it's 12:30.
Golly, it is. Well, I'd better say good night. Good night, Major Brutt.
Good night, Miss Portia. I do hope we'll meet again.
I'm sure we will.
Portia, when you go up, look in the drawer in the hall table. Letter came for you just before dinner by special messenger. I completely forgot.
Oh, a letter for me. How very nice. I'll get it on the way up. Good night, everyone.
Good night, Parker.
It must be nice to have a sweet little kid like that to keep one cheerful. How old did you say she was?
16.
16. She must be wonderful company for you, Mrs. Crane. She's so very sweet.
He sent me a letter. Eddie sent me a letter all for myself. My dear Miss Portia, my dear Miss Portia, I feel I must write and tell you how very pleasant it was when you gave me my hat after Anna's tea. When you appeared in the hall, all lovely and sweet, carrying my hat, the thought occurred, I hope this isn't presumptuous of me, that perhaps you had actually been waiting for me. I was waiting, but I must never tell him. The thought that you might have been waiting for me made me feel quite in heaven. You and I seem to be rather alone people. With you, that is just chance, of course, while with me I expect it is partly my bad nature. Oh, Portia, I do wish that you and I could be friends. And so I'm asking you to have tea with me on Saturday at Madame Tussaud's. Oh, dear. Come in.
Good evening, Miss Portia. I saw the light.
Do you sit down on the bed, Matches?
Oh, I haven't time to sit and talk. I just came in to say good night. I'll turn your pillow.
Oh, no, it's really quite all right the way it is.
Oh, nonsense, girl. You'll sleep better for it if I turn the pillow. Oh, what's this you've got under here?
Well, it's only a letter.
What have you got?
Tell me a letter.
And who's been writing you a letter,
Matches, please give it back. It's only from Eddie.
Ah. So it's from that Eddie.
Well, it's only because I got him his hat.
And he saw fit to thank you kindly for getting his hat. That's the first manners Eddie's shown around here. Popping in and out like a weasel and making up to her. The job he's got with Mr. Thomas's firm, she baked out of Mr. Thomas for him. That Eddie's no class, Portia.
I've only met him once, and he was very nice.
You'd be wrong to trust him. He reminds me of that pigeon fellow that went with Anna when she was your age.
Did you know Pigeon?
I know of him, and he was quite the one, they say.
If Anna loved Pigeon, does that mean she doesn't love Thomas?
I'm sure I don't know. But I do know that Eddie is Pigeon all over again, and that Eddie's always up to something. And he makes free. You don't know.
Oh, I know when I'm happy. I know that. And Eddie made me very happy. Oh, I can hardly wait till Saturday.
Oh, Portia, when you laugh, you remind me of a sweet, beautiful angel.
Oh, Eddie, people will hear.
But I want them to hear.
Oh, then let's talk about you.
Very well. I shall reveal intimate details.
Mm-hmm.
As a child, I was afraid of the dark. I now own 36 neckties. My favorite foods are jelly parsley and cheese balls.
Now you're being silly.
Madam, I was never more serious in my life. I have a passion for jellied consommé and cheese straws. I invite you to invite me to dinner and find out.
Oh, I wish Anna would let me have a dinner. Just for the two of us.
Oh, she will someday when neither of us has an appetite. Anna's such a cynic, with always depraved reasons for doing the nicest things. I'm really several degrees worse since I started to know Anna. I wish I'd known you sooner. How old are you, Portia?
16. How old are you, Eddie?
23.
We're terribly young.
But old enough to know when we're happy. Most people rattle me, but you seem to understand me. You're the only person I need do nothing about.
What do you mean, Eddie? Do nothing about?
Well, all the other people I know make me feel that I've got to sing for my supper. Darling, would you think I was vain if I said I was good-looking?
No, you are very good-looking.
Well, I am, you see. I've got all this charm and I can excite people.
Yes.
That's why Anna invites me to tea, because I'm diverting, amusing. Sometimes when I talk to people, they jeer in their minds and think I'm dramatic.
They do?
Well, why not? I am dramatic. The whole of Shakespeare is about me. All the others, of course, feel it that way, too, which is why they're all dead nuts in Shakespeare.
Oh.
But because I show it, when they haven't got a nerve to, they jump all over me. I'm sorry, Portia. I didn't mean to bore you, but...
No, you didn't bore me, Eddie. Well, except for Matcher, this is the first real conversation with anyone I've had. Since I came to London, I mean. Oh, this is much more the sort of conversation that I have in my head and put in my diary.
Oh, do you keep a diary?
Yes, it's a very private diary.
Then be sure you hide it well. Lock it up. Hide everything.
You talk as if we were part of a plot.
We are a plot. We must keep plotting all the time. That's our life. The whole pack are against us. So hide. Hide everything. Especially from Anna.
Do you think Anna would really harm us?
Yes. There's nothing Anna'd enjoy more than putting a low interpretation on our friendship. She loves making a low person of another person. But she'd never dare to be a low person herself.
I don't mean to criticize you, but I don't see how you can say these things when I'm certain that you like Anna.
Well, I suppose I do. But then we must have a villain of some sort. There's always a villain, you know. That's why you must be careful of that diary of yours in the future.
There may be no diary in the future.
Oh? You mean you're going to stop keeping it?
Well, now that there's you, Eddie, I may not want my diary so much. Now that I can tell my thoughts to you.
But we may not meet often enough for that.
Oh, I could keep my thoughts for you, Eddie. Telling you would be so much better than writing them in a book.
But you could write your thoughts down and show them to me.
Mm-mm, that wouldn't be the same thing.
Well, why not?
Well, up until now, I've written just for myself. And if I'm to keep writing the same way, then I shall have to imagine that you don't exist. You make me different, Eddie.
How do you mean?
You make me, not alone. When I first came to London, I was the only person in the world. But now I have you, Eddie. Someone to whom I can talk. Someone to trust and who'll understand me. Someone to write about in my diary.
Portia, darling.
March 17th, Saturday. Dearest diary, I am to have tea with Eddie on Sunday while Thomas and Anna are away in the country. That will be tomorrow. I like a day when there's some sort of tomorrow. Dearest diary, I shall just put Sunday. Eddie prefers it that way. I love him very much. Monday. A picture puzzle came from Major Bruss. He's a dear. I was glad for the puzzle because I'm lonely in a new sort of way for me. Until I went out with Eddie, I didn't feel like this, unless I felt like this without knowing. Thursday. Thomas and Anna are going away to Capri for a holiday in April. They can't take me, but do not know where to leave me in England because I can't stay here. Matches will be cleaning the house. I wonder what they will do with me. March 26th. Another Sunday with Eddie. We went to his flat. He said what a pity we're too young to marry. No one has ever wanted to marry me before. I do hope Eddie can come down and visit me when Thomas and Anna are away. They are sending me to live for 2 weeks with Anna's old governess. Her name is Mrs. Heckam. Her husband is dead. She has 2 grown stepchildren, Dickie and Daphne. Eddie says he will come for a weekend. He says he loves the seaside.
Don't trip, Portia. Skates are heavy.
I'll hold on to you, Eddie.
If Anna knew what a time we're having, she'd fly right back from Capri. The mean old cat.
Oh, Eddie, be careful what you say. Mrs. Heckam will hear you.
How can she when she's sitting up there in the gallery?
Well, Daphne or Dickie might hear, and that's the same thing.
Dear Mrs. Heckam. See, she's watching us now like an old hen.
That's because she's been wanting you to skate once with Daphne. And you really should, you know.
What care I for Mrs. Heckam's Daphne when it is you I love, my love.
Oh, my dearest Eddie.
Oh, there's Daphne now stopping up ahead with Brother Dickie. They're signaling for us to pull over.
I say there, how about chucking them for now? I'm going to the late movies. What do you say, Dickie?
There's a musical picture with Annie Meagles. Would you like that, Portia?
Sounds wonderful.
Good, then we'll all go. Dickie, you skate over to the gallery and tell Mumsy. She won't want to go, I'm sure.
If we're separating, then I think I'd better go over and say goodnight to Mrs. Peckham.
Sure, why don't you do that, Portia? You go over with Dickie. Eddie can stay here and help me take my skates off. You don't mind, do you, Eddie?
Very good picture, eh, Portia?
Yes, very.
I say, do you mind if I smoke?
No, not at all.
Thank you. I light up. Oh, so the match won't hurt your eyes. Look the other way. Good heavens, Portia. What's happened?
How could he do it?
Who is doing what?
Eddie. He's holding Daphne's hand. He's holding her hand.
Oh, Portia, what a silly question. How do I know why I held Daphne's hand?
Please, Eddie. Eddie, they'll hear you all over the house.
Oh, nonsense. Dickie was half asleep when we got out of the movie. And Daphne told me she sleeps like a log. What did they do hear me? Holding hands isn't misbehaving.
Oh, I know it isn't really. Only you were my friend, and I was so proud of you.
But holding Daphne's hand didn't mean anything.
But it did to me, Eddie.
Portia... You're such a little girl.
No, I'm not such a little girl. You once wanted to marry me.
Only because you were such a little girl. I thought you were different, that you understood me. Now you're just like any jealous girl at the seaside, watching and judging, trying to piece me together into something that isn't there. Don't make me hate myself, because then you'll make me hate you.
Oh, please, please don't hate me, Eddie. Oh, I'd rather be dead than be a disappointment to you. Please. Oh, you're my whole reason to be alive. I promise. Please, I promise to try and understand you.
But you never will understand. I can see that.
It's not really important whether I understand or not. I promise never to be stupid like this again, even when I don't understand.
Shut up. You make me feel like such a bully. If only you could stay as you were and not change.
Oh, but I can't stay as I am. I feel everyone waiting, everyone getting impatient, wondering how I'm going to turn out. They'll all expect something in a year or two more. I don't know what to be to please them. And now you say you won't love me when I grow up.
Stop putting words in my mouth. Oh, I should have known this had happened. It always does with women, old or young. It's happening now.
No, Eddie. Eddie, don't let that expression come into your face. Let me kiss it away. Off your mouth. Off your cheek. Your chin. Oh, you're my perfect Eddie. Open your eyes. Oh, I can't bear you to look like that.
Go away, in the name of heaven, go away and be quiet. Oh, Portia, don't look at me like that, and don't tremble like that. It's more than I can bear. Something awful is going to happen to us. I cannot feel what you feel for us. I'm shut up inside myself. All I know is that you've been so sweet. Oh, it's no use holding on to me. I shall only drown you. Portia, you don't know what you're doing.
I know that I love you.
Darling, I don't want you.
Daddy.
I've got no place for you in my life. I only want what you give. I don't want the whole of anyone. When I try and tell you the truth about myself, I fill you with despair. Oh, life is so much more impossible than you think. You want the whole of me, only the whole of me isn't there for anybody.
Don't say that.
Let go of me. Let go. Take your arms away.
Eddie, what's to become of me when you stay alone inside yourself?
I don't know. You and I are enough to break anyone's heart. How can we not break our own? We're as drowned in this life as though we were in the sea.
From Hollywood, the NBC University Theater is bringing you Maureen O'Sullivan as Portia in a radio version of Elizabeth Bowen's The Death of the Heart. If you are interested in supplementing your enjoyment of these NBC University Theater productions with home study under college supervision, be sure to listen to the announcement at the close of this program. And now, since our commentator Diana Trilling, literary critic and author, is unable to be with us today, here are her comments on Elizabeth Bowen's novel, The Death of the Heart. With The Death of the Heart, published 10 years ago, Elizabeth Bowen established the literary reputation which has since been sustained and enlarged by her short stories, her critical writing, and her most recent novel, The Heat of the Day. An Anglo-Irish woman, Miss Bowen belongs in the tradition of literary sensibility, which began with Catherine Mansfield and reached its highest development with Virginia Woolf. In critical esteem, she holds a place similar to that of the American writer, Catherine Ann Porter. Preeminently feminine, sensitive, precise, a very conscious stylist, Miss Bowen, like Miss Porter, is concerned with the subtleties of human relationships rather than the large drama of social conflict. Yet, so far from being remote from the realities of contemporary society, everything Miss Bowen writes bears closely upon the current social, even political scene. It is simply that her approach to social problems is subjective and symbolical, not polemical. Art, in Miss Bowen's practice, is an exceedingly fine filter to life. But what she sifts so delicately is some of the crudest stuff of our contemporary situation. And thus, while The Death of the Heart may at first glance seem a merely personal story, an account of an often exaggerated emotional response of an adolescent girl, on a deeper level, it is to be understood as a story of modern England, indeed, of the whole of modern civilization. Anna and Thomas, unsympathetic sister-in-law and brother of Miss Bowen's heroine, represent, if you will, the moral decline of 20th century culture. Thomas is in the advertising business, that peculiarly modern profession. He and his wife are literate, sophisticated, but grown too wise in worldliness and self-protection. They're not bad people. They're merely mechanical people who can no longer trust such feelings as remain to them. Portia, Miss Bowen's young heroine, is the innocence which in our time lives so embattled. Too young to have learned the defensive ways of the world, she yet has growing emotional strength because she lives by her heart until her heart is broken by experience. The meanings in The Death of the Heart are very compressed. Miss Bowen writes with a high charge of intellect, but her own heart, her feeling for even the ostensible villains of the story, save her novel from ever becoming bitter. It is only tragic in its comment on the unhappy direction the world is traveling. That concludes Diana Trilling's commentary. Our radio version of The Death of the Heart, starring Maureen O'Sullivan as Portia, will continue from Hollywood after a brief pause for station identification.
Gracious magic, the cow's got everywhere. Master, you have got everywhere clean.
Oh, so you've been looking over the house.
Yes, it's beautiful. Not that it isn't always.
Most likely you'd notice it coming back from the Hickams. I know those seaside houses, all claptrap and must.
When I see the house so nice like this, it makes me wish that only you and I lived here.
Yeah, you ought to be ashamed to talk like that. I'm sure Mr. Thomas, for one, would be disappointed if he was to know you wished you were still at that seaside.
Oh, Matt, did you do fly off? All I said was that
I... Yeah, yeah, goodness, they have taught you to speak up. Anyone wouldn't know you. You've changed.
Oh, I'm sorry. But you go on at me because I've been away. After all, I didn't go. I was sent.
I dare say the sea air suited Mr. Eddy.
He was only there for 2 days.
2 days are 2 days at the seaside. I understood him to say he had a fine time there. At least, those were his words.
When were they his words? Did Eddie call, Matches? When?
5:30 yesterday, Mr. Eddie called to say he would be occupied for several days with business.
Oh, but Matches, didn't he realize that I'd be back today?
What he realized or didn't realize, I couldn't tell you. Now clear away from my table like a good girl while I plug in the iron. I've got to do Mrs. Crane's black dinner dress.
Well, that means she'll be staying home for dinner.
And when you go up, you might save me the stairs and take her this box of flowers that came. She's in the bath.
All right.
Who is it?
Portia, Anna.
Do open the door and sit down outside, then we can hear each other.
Just brought up a box of flowers that came.
Oh, how nice. See who they're from.
All right. The card says, Major Brass.
Oh, no. That poor lost creature. He simply grips sentiment. Open the box and hold them up so I can see what he sent. No sooner are we home than he's at us again. Oh, what a horrid shade of pink. What are they?
They're carnations. Don't you like them?
They make me ill. Must be hundreds. He probably didn't have lunch to pay for them. Why does he send carnations to me?
He's a very nice man. Sends me puzzles. I'm sure he likes you, Anna. That's why he sent you these.
Most likely he's still looking for a job. Give the flowers to Matchett. They might do for her room.
You can cross the street now, little girl.
Oh, hello, Mr. Miller.
What a coincidence we should meet. I'm on my way to your house for tea and dinner, too, if Anna'll have me.
Oh.
We can walk back together.
I don't think I'm going back just yet. I came out for some fresh air.
Then I shall be late for tea and walk with you, if you'll have me.
Oh, yes. How's your new novel?
Very difficult. How's your diary?
What makes you think I keep a diary?
Oh, I didn't mean to frighten you, but I'm sure you must have thoughts about life, and that's what makes people set things right down in diaries, although, of course, it's madness to write things down, and someone might read it and get the wrong idea.
What are you trying to tell me?
Well, in your case, if you had a diary, say, I wouldn't write about someone like Anna.
Did Anna find my diary and tell you?
Now, look, I thought we were just talking about a hypothetical diary, one that never really was.
I do keep a diary. Did Anna find my diary and tell you?
Portia, I think we'd better drop the subject.
Now, please, Mr. Miller, don't try to put me off. Did Anna find my diary and read it?
Yes. Anna did, as a matter of fact.
How could she be so cruel?
Wait, Portia. Come back, come back.
Hello, Mrs. Quain here.
Well, this is Eddie.
Oh, you sound upset.
Portia's just rung me up to tell me that she has seen me at my flat. It seems that she's learned that you've been reading her diary.
Really? How distressing for her.
I don't think you realize what's happened, Anna.
And I suppose you do?
I can understand what a thing like this can mean in Portia's terms.
Really, Eddie? Well, it strikes me that you seldom really understand anything because you're much too busy wondering what to make of it. I hope you and Portia have a lovely interview.
Portia, darling, you mustn't let yourself become upset.
But, Eddie, why did you tell Anna about my diary?
I didn't really. Now, let me fix you a cup of tea.
Oh, I don't want any tea. I suppose you told Anna for a joke. Some part of the joke you're always having with her.
My poor, excellent lamb. I didn't tell Anna. Anna told me.
But I told you, Eddie.
Well, she told me first. Anna's been at that book for some time. She really is an awful bounder, you know.
So when I told you, you already knew.
Yes, I did. But really, darling, you make too much of things like keeping this diary. It's ever so honest, and it's beautifully clever, and it's sweet, just like you. But is it so extraordinary? Diaries are things almost all girls keep.
If it mattered so little... Why did you pretend it meant something to you?
Because I love to talk about it. I'm always moved when you tell me things.
Eddie, how could you know all this time and not tell me?
I didn't want to upset you. You don't think it was just for fun, do you?
Oh, I don't know. But you must have some sort of dreadful fun. You like despising more than you like loving. Oh, something terrible happens to you when I'm not with you, Eddie.
Please, don't put your arms around me.
Oh, but I want to kiss you.
No, don't kiss me now.
Why?
Because I don't want you to.
Oh.
Besides, it's time you were going home.
Oh, it's not home. And I'm not going. Eddie, are you Anna's lover?
In a way, I suppose. Although she's far too cautious and smart to have a real lover. I don't think Anna's got any passion at all.
Then why do you bother with Anna?
I don't know. Why do you try to get me all figured out in black and white?
Oh, I don't mean to be that way. I just want to understand you, Eddie. You once said we loved each other.
Well, perhaps we did. You used to be much, much, much gentler, much more sweet. I told you once that you were the only person that I could naturally love. But you're different lately since your visit to the sea.
Now you say that everything's over?
Portia, I've never meant to be unkind to you.
I've got no way of telling.
That's just it. I wish you had.
Oh, Eddie, you're the only person I've ever loved.
Well, that's what I mean. You don't know what to expect. To you, all the things I say seem never to have been said before. All the other women I've ever known knew the ropes. But you apply the same hopeless judgments to simply everything. Because I said I loved you, you expect me to be as sweet to you as your mother.
No, you don't love me anymore.
Portia, you don't know what you mean by love.
Oh, but I do.
We used to have such fun because I used to think we understood each other. But the fact is that now you're driving me mad.
Oh, I must make some people happy. I make Major Brough happy and Matchett sometimes. Eddie, could you be as happy without me as you used to be with me when you thought I was different?
Yes. Yes, I certainly do feel that at the moment. You quite give me the horrors.
Thank you for seeing me. I'll go now. Only I haven't any money. Can you lend me 5 shillings? I'll send you a postal order for it in the morning.
All right. Yes. Yes, why don't you do that, darling? I suppose you can always get money from Thomas.
Thomas, did you look in Portia's room? She may have come in, not been heard.
I thought it, St. Quentin, but Portia's not there. You know, Anna, no one but us would let a girl of that age run around London alone.
Oh, shut up, Thomas. Don't be so upper class. At her age, girls are typists and clerk and heaven knows what.
Nevertheless, it gives me a turn to find she's not in.
Well, then why don't we start to ring up the hospitals?
Before that, why not ring up Eddie?
Because for one thing, he's never in, and also, why on earth should I?
Well, you quite often do. I grant that Eddie's not bright, but he might have some idea. After all, they are quite fit.
By all means, let's try everything, darling. Give me the phone.
You don't suppose Portia could still be down with Matchett, Thomas?
No, I've talked with Matchett. Oh, what luck with Eddie.
He's probably gone out, as I imagine.
Anna, has anything special happened today? Has Portia been upset about anything?
How do I know what she's doing or thinking?
Well, maybe she just decided to stay out.
Perhaps Portia hasn't much of a talent for home life.
Yes. I'm sure we all have our feelings.
What you both really mean is that I am not nice to Portia. How little it takes to bring things to the top.
You seem unduly sensitive.
Well, I'd better go.
We're not having a scene. There's no crisis yet. Won't be even nearly a crisis for half an hour. Meanwhile, it's 8 o'clock. The whole thing is, do we have dinner under these circumstances? I don't know, really. The sort of thing never happened before. Thomas?
We'll do as you wish, Anna.
Very well. Matchett.
Yes, Mum?
We won't wait for Miss Portia. She'll be a little late this evening. We'll have our dinner now.
Beg pardon, Major Brough. There's a young lady to see you.
A young lady?
She's asking for you, sir, in the lounge.
But I'm not expecting a young lady.
In the lounge, sir. She said she'd wait.
That means she's here now. Good heavens. Tell her I'll be right out. Hello. Portia, what are you doing here?
I came to see you.
But such a long way from where you live, at this time of the evening.
I don't know what time it is. Oh, Major Brough, I've got nowhere to be.
Steady there, I've got you.
I've got nowhere to be.
Oh, come, come, that's nonsense, you know. Just try to stay steady and try to tell me what's the matter. Then I'll take you home.
I'm not going back.
Oh, come now.
No. No, I'm not going back there.
Look, everyone's staring at us. Try sitting down.
No, no, they all make me do that. I don't want to just sit down. I want to stay.
Look here, Portia. I think the world of you. I don't know when I've met a young person I've thought so much of. But if you'll just think about me for a minute, you'll understand that this sort of thing can put me in bed with your people, who are my very good friends. A lonely bachelor like myself enjoys having good friends like Thomas and Anna where he can drop in. You wouldn't want to mess that up for me, would you?
But there's nothing to mess up. You're the other person that Anna laughs at.
I beg your pardon?
Oh, I don't think you understand. Anna's always laughing at you, Major Brush. She laughed at your carnations being the wrong color, and she gave them to Matches. And Thomas thinks that because you've no job, you must be after something. Whatever you do, even send me a puzzle, he thinks that the more. And she laughs the more. And they groan at each other after you've gone away. You and I are the same.
Well, I have been a pretty blundering sort of fellow. I don't know what made me think they'd ever have time for me.
Major Brad, do you like this hotel?
Yes, I suppose so. Why?
Well, what I mean is, if you had to leave tomorrow, it wouldn't matter. You could tell them I was your niece who got a pain and had to lie down or something, and then we could go and talk in your room.
You've got to go home, oh, Portia.
Wait, will you take me to your room? I'm starting to cry.
Steady.
Give me half an hour. 20 minutes, that's all. And then if you say I must go, I'll go someplace.
All right. We'll go to my room. It isn't a very pleasant room. You see, I live in the attic. It isn't a very big room, but they give me cup price terms.
I would like to sit down now.
Oh, by all means, have this chair by the fire.
Thank you.
Now, Portia, what is it that you're running from?
From them all. What they make happen.
I thought there was something special. I thought something had happened.
It has. Only it's been happening all the time.
Portia, have you and Lady had a quarrel?
Yes.
So that's it.
No. No, it isn't just Eddie. Well, the sad thing about that is that I thought he was the person that I'd marry. Because of him, I felt safe with all the others. I always thought of it as Eddie and I together, against the others. But now I found out that he was with them all the time. Well, that's only one of the reasons that I can't go back.
But surely blood is thicker.
Oh, no, no, not mine and Anna's.
But what about your brother? Surely you and Thomas should stick together.
Well, Thomas is ashamed because of our father. And he's afraid the whole time that I'll be sorry for him.
Nevertheless, Portia, don't you think that going home would be best at the moment?
This sort of moment never really stops. I'm not going home, Major Grant.
Then what do you mean to do?
Stay here with you. You do like me, don't you?
Well, yes.
Well, you send me puzzles. You say you think about me. Anna says you're sentimental. Well, I could do things for you. We could have a home. You wouldn't have to live in a hotel. Tell Thomas you want to keep me and he could send you income from my money. I could cook. My mother cooked when she was in London.
Surely, this is out of the question, Portia.
Why couldn't you marry me? I could cheer you up. I wouldn't get in your way. And we wouldn't be half so lonely.
What you say is very touching. I'm sure you will cook. I'm all in favor of it. But not for some years yet. And I'm afraid, not for me.
Suppose I shouldn't have asked you.
Oh, no, I appreciate what you said. I feel pleased, but you think too much of me and not enough of what I'm trying to say. I must still ask you to forget this and go home.
But I can't.
It's not a question of doing the best you can do. It's a question of doing the only thing possible. I'll come with you, of course.
Do you want me to go now?
We'll telephone first. If you're not home soon, they'll be calling out the police and the fire brigades.
You may telephone and tell them I'm with you. But please don't tell them I'm going back. That will all have to depend.
Depend on what?
on what they mean to do about me. Oh, thank you so much, Major Brutt. Would you give me the name of the hotel again?
Karachi. Karachi.
I have it. I can spell it. Thank you. Thank you so much for calling. We've been so worried about Portia.
And you will call back?
Yes. Goodbye, Major Brutt.
Goodbye, Mrs. Crane.
Well, Anna, what did he have to say?
The lost is found at the Karachi Hotel.
Oh. Is he bringing her right home?
No, Thomas. He didn't even suggest that he bring her home.
Then what did he want?
He wanted to know what we meant to do.
What are the meaning of all this?
Portia doesn't want to come home. She doesn't like us.
Anna, what makes you say such things?
Because Major Brutt just told me as much. And I've read her diary.
Good heavens.
It's really very good, Thomas, but it's not very complimentary. Gave me a very disagreeable feeling about being alive. Or at least about being me.
I shouldn't wonder. Oh, this is deplorable, Anna. How are we going to get her to come home tonight?
Thomas, it isn't just a question of what we're going to do or say this night. It's far more complicated than that. It isn't just the diary. It's our whole miserable existence together.
Anna's right, Thomas. You're faced with the question of the three of you going on living here.
Nevertheless, St. Quentin, she must come home tonight, regardless of the situation.
It's a horrible, nasty situation, and she's created it.
Oh, no, Anna. Portia hasn't created this situation. By running off to Major Butt, she's brought you all face to face with the impossibility of living. You see, Portia has a point of view.
That's no excuse, St. Quentin. Everybody has a point of view.
Well, the fact remains that if you're anxious to get Portia home and do the right thing, you'll have to try to feel as she feels.
That's a question. How do we feel about Portia?
Well, you're both jealous of the girl, but she doesn't know that you're jealous.
How do you mean?
She's not properly aware that she's enjoying all the things that you so envy. Her vitality, her keenness for living, and her youth.
Then if what you say is true, I don't deny it, why doesn't Portia enjoy these things while she has them and leave off from her wandering around Thomas and me trying to detect what is and is not and noting down clues in her diary?
Try to understand our position. No grown person can afford to be judged by an innocent half-child, half-woman.
We're not perfect, St. Quentin, but neither's Portia. Look at her relationship with Eddie. Throwing herself at Eddie.
Well, what did you do with Pigeon? Is that much more than her age?
Why always bring that up?
Why always have it in mind?
Dear me, how I hate Eddie.
Yes, yes, he's such a little rat. But Eddie serves to make us realize how upside down Portia's life must be.
How do you mean, upside down?
Well, it's so upside down that it's become quite natural that a little scab like Eddie should seem natural to her as anyone else.
Portia would have thrown herself at Eddie regardless. She wants to pity him.
Exactly. Portia sees Eddie as the victimized character, the desperate little man. There's something so showy about his desperation. He makes such a wonderful fuss. Yes, it takes guts not to make a fuss out of your life. And guts is something that Eddie hasn't got.
I think you've both done a beautiful job on Eddie, but we've still got Portia on our hands.
Yes. How do we get Portia home, St. Quentin?
Well, if any one of us were Portia this evening, what would be the only thing you could bear to have done for you?
Something with no fuss. Something quite ordinary that wouldn't be embarrassing.
Obviously, then she won't want to see me or Thomas.
Well, what do you suggest, Anna?
That we send my housekeeper. Ratchet.
Won't that be a little cruel?
No. I think it's a good idea. Mm-hmm. Portia and Matchett are on very good terms because they both knew my father. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'll ring.
Yes, Matchett will bring it off very properly. She'll scold Portia, but she won't analyze her.
Well, I better get my hat and be on my way. It's been a long evening. Oh, well, before I go, Anna, there's one question. If you were Portia, growing up for that first and only time, what would be your feeling?
Contempt. I would feel contempt for the pack of us who muddled our own lives and then stopped me from living mine.
Right.
I would feel boredom. Oh, such boredom with a secret society of grown-up people. That secret society about nothing in which you and Thomas and I and Eddie keep making meaningless signs at each other.
Yes, well, go on.
I'd have a contempt for all married people playing at the falsity of living happily ever after.
Yes.
And a contempt for unmarried people, looking cautious and touchy because they're thinking only of themselves.
Oh, touche, Anna.
I'd have a frantic desire to be handled with feeling, and at the same time to be let alone. A wish to be asked how I felt, and a great wish to be taken for granted.
This is all quite new, Anna. How much of it is the diary, and how much is you?
Anna, does this mean that you and Portia can at least try to make a new start together?
No, Thomas. It can't be, even though we may both wish it very much. I shall always insult her, and she will always persecute me. I can never forgive her youth. And the things I can tell her, she will not wish to believe. You rang, sir?
Yes, Magic. You will please get your coat and bonnet and fetch Miss Portia home. It seems that she's at the Karachi Hotel, visiting her friend.
Dear diary, Natcha came for me. She fussed a little, but it was all right. School tomorrow, and I suppose it will be my ordinary life again. When we lived in France, my father told me we could not have an ordinary life because we were strangers in a foreign land. He'd been away so long that somehow he thought it was the people in England who led ordinary lives and were happy. Once when he did come back to England on a visit in the spring and walked past Thomas's great house in London when the tulips were in bloom, it was all so beautiful that he felt quite sure that even Thomas and Anna were happy inside. He thought that people who did not do extraordinary things led ordinary lives. But if I were to meet my father again, I would have to tell him that there is no ordinary life.
You have been listening to The Death of the Heart, an NBC University Theater production of the novel by Elizabeth Bowen, starring Maureen O'Sullivan. If you wish to expand your knowledge and appreciation of literature, we suggest that you might enjoy the college-supervised courses now being offered in connection with the NBC University Theater. These courses are offered by the University of Tulsa in Oklahoma, Kansas State Teachers College, and the University of Louisville. For full information as to how you may enhance your knowledge through these home study courses, write to NBC University Theater, in care of the University of Louisville, Louisville, Kentucky, the University of Tulsa, Tulsa, Oklahoma, or Kansas State Teachers College, Pittsburgh, Kansas. Next week, be with us again at the NBC University Theater for a dramatization of one of America's finest historical novels, which, happily, is also one of today's bestsellers. A.B. Guthrie's The Big Sky, starring Bob Hutton. And the following week, a hard-hitting novel of the Second World War, Stephen Hyams' The Crusaders, starring Cesar Romero. The Death of the Heart was prepared for radio by Richard E. Davis. Starred as Portia, Maureen O'Sullivan. Our cast included Dan O'Herlihy, Ramsey Hill, Monty Margetts, Norma Varden, Donald Morrison, Dennis Hoy, Queenie Leonard. Your announcer, Don Stanley. Our intermission commentary was written by Diana Trilling. The original music score was composed and conducted by Dr. Albert Harris. The director of the NBC University Theater is Andrew C. Love. This program came to you from Hollywood. This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.